Patrick Henningsen talks on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back, folks. Welcome back to this live broadcast. We're now number two here at TNT, today's News Talk. This is the Patrick Henningsen Show, Monday to Friday, live and direct here at this particular time of the day or the evening, depending on where you are, which side of the Atlantic you are. And a big hello to everybody in the TNT chat community. Hello to everybody in there. See some familiar faces, some usual suspects. Great to see you guys in there. Great to see the numbers building as well. Great to see a lot of the interaction we're having as well during the live stream on X, Twitter, getting a lot more comments, a lot more shares. A lot more people are finding out about this program and they're really liking what they're hearing and seeing when they're tuning in. And that's really down to a lot of things. One of them is the great work that the team at TNT have put in to all of these great programs that we have 24/7, 365 talk radio on this global media platform, but also our guests, our experts, our friends of the show, the people that come on to offer their expert opinion. We have a great cast, a great repertoire of experts and analysts here, and I want to tip my hat to all of them. One of the great ones, of course, is going to be joining us in a couple of minutes, Daniel McAdams. I'm looking forward to that conversation. We'll go European and U.S. there, and Freddie Ponton, of course, brilliant segment before the break, as usual. And again, you definitely want to be, if you're on X or Twitter, and you're not following Freddie, he's got one of the best accounts on the platform. In terms of the information that he's laying out on all the top stories, you're getting the insight, the details, the information. You want to know why we're so up to date and why we're so well informed on this program is because of people like Freddie, because Freddie's doing fantastic research. He's sharing that with his team and we're reading it. We're keeping us up to date. We have some great people and we want you to be up to date as well. So do follow Freddie Ponton at X Twitter. Just put his name into the search bar, Freddie Ponton. P-O-N-T-O-N, and you'll see his account. Follow that. Put him on notifications as well, and you'll be glad you did because you'll be ahead of the curve on so many stories. So listen, we'll connect Daniel McAdams in a few minutes. You know, before the break, Freddie was talking about Nakba Day, very sad, commemorating the ethnic cleansing of the native Palestinian population when the state of Israel was created. Well, it's not really officially a state. It is in name, but it hasn't declared its borders. That's because it plans to expand. This is very controversial and against multiple UN resolutions that are being completely ignored by Israel and their allies, but that's a whole nother story. We could go into detail on that. The litany of violated resolutions at the UN level and other international agreements that Israel's just swept aside and saying, well, we don't care what everyone else is saying. We're going to do what we're going to do, even if that means breaking international law, even if that means committing crimes against humanity, even if that means violating the Genocide Convention. And that's what we've seen over the last 7 months. Now imagine laying siege to Gaza, one of the poorest places, the most densely populated place on the planet, cutting off all food, water, electricity, internet, not allowing anything in or out. This is what Israel did in the wake of October 7th. Collective punishment, openly daring the world to do something about it. And then after months, finally, we're able to get some aid into the starving and dying population in Gaza. And instead, this is what you see. I'm going to show you a clip of Israeli settlers pulling aid off of the trucks and destroying it. Not only that, they're bringing their children out and getting their children, Israeli settler children, to destroy the aid, the food, the medical supplies, the child diapers and things like that, baby formula, who knows what else is on these shipments. The settlers are saying, no, we're not going to, they're stopping the trucks and they're destroying the contents. I mean, how cruel and sinister is this. So we've got one of these clips. We're going to roll this and just watch this. You will never see a scene like this anywhere else. It's unreal.
איך הם יהיו מחבלים טובים אחרי זה?
I mean, it's one thing for, you know, adults, you know, screwed up adults to do this sort of thing, twisted political ideologues. The children are too young to be ideologues. But yet these people, what kind of a sick society is going to teach their children to do things like this? Even in light of what's already the suffering that's taken place, 40,000 odd people, women and children, civilians have been killed, slaughtered in a carpet bombing campaign. I mean, it's unbelievable. And then AIDS coming in for those people surviving. They've already been through hell. They're going through hell. And people are bringing their children out to destroy the aid deliveries. I mean, this is sick. There's nothing else that we can say. I mean, you do not see scenes like this anywhere else in the world. What is wrong with that society? Serious problems. And it starts at the top with Benjamin Netanyahu and this radical ethno-nationalist regime that they have, this coalition that's formed with all sorts of radicals, ethno-nationalists, the equivalent of the Nazi far right in Israeli terms. This is what that government's been called, by the way. And they have some of the most radical individuals there. They want full ethnic cleansing, if not an elimination of the Palestinian population. And they've said it many times. Many of these officials have said it on record that they make no bones about what they want from this situation. But this scene that we've seen here with the aid deliveries being destroyed, it's just unbelievable. This is so far beyond the pale at this point. It really is. It defies the words to describe what you're watching here. It is so insidious. It is just unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. And you know what else is unbelievable? You will not see that clip on Fox News. You will not see that clip featured on CNN. It's too much for them. It's way too much for their sensibility, for their politics, and for the interests that they're protecting. Imagine for a moment, imagine if those were Palestinians or Arabs destroying aid deliveries to a Jewish community in Israel, holed up in a ghetto under siege. Imagine bringing their children out, Arab children destroying UN aid deliveries. What would the international uproar be like? Tell me you wouldn't see that on every single cable network news channel on the planet. And the BBC, CNN, the CBC in Canada, they'd be running this on heavy rotation. They'd be gushing op-eds about it on the Washington Post and the New York Times. And they'd be like, we're having this come to Jesus moment now. We need this moment of reflection. This is just too much. Let's bomb the Middle East and turn it into a glass crater. That's what the neocons would be saying if the shoe was on the other foot. But here we have an egregious violation, not just of international law, destroying humanitarian aid, but bringing your children to do the destruction. Babies, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old. What are they teaching these kids? Are they not teaching them absolute hate? I mean, this is indoctrination on a scale and in a way that is just unbelievable, really. This is just incredible. And again, you will not see it in the Western mainstream media. If you do, you'll be lucky. But they should show it. It'd be important for them to show it, to show how far out of control this situation has gotten. That one side is being completely coddled while the other gets completely steamrolled. It's that simple, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know how better to describe the situation. Anyway, it beggars belief. It beggars belief how it's been allowed to go this long. 7 months. We're going to be in our 8th month of this catastrophe in June. And still not, it doesn't seem like we're even close to resolving this situation going forward. We've got a lot to cover, a lot to talk about, got a lot to think about. Our leaders have a lot to answer for, that's for sure. Let's take a break right now, though, with TNT, Today's News Talk. And when we come back, we're going to be talking to Daniel McAdams, director of the Ron Paul Institute, about the developments in the Republic of Georgia and politically in the U.S. what is left for the Biden administration to do? What moves do they have left vis-a-vis Ukraine? We'll talk to Daniel about all this and more on the other side. I'm Patrick Henningsen. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
TNT's Rick Munn.
Then he goes on to quote somebody called Thomas Davis. He said, it's not blood that makes you Irish, but willingness to be part of the Irish nation. Absolute bollocks. It's your blood that makes you Irish. Then you can choose to turn your back on Ireland and be not Irish and be a traitor to Irish, as the Irish government are doing. It's not your willingness to be Irish that makes you Irish. He says, say no to racism, bigotry and hatred by voting number one for Shaikh Omar al-Qadri on the 7th of June in the European elections. Omar al-Qadri, I won't be voting in the Irish elections, I can't. And even if I could, I would not be voting for you, you little weasel.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this live broadcast. I'm Patrick Henningsen. We're in hour number two of TNT, Today's News Talk, the Patrick Henningsen Show, Monday to Friday, live and direct here, 4 p.m. till 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And if you're in the UK, this is your evening entertainment and news at 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. along the current time, British summer time. Tune in where you can. Great to see everybody in the TNT chat community. Right now, however, you know, I want to talk about a couple of things, U.S. politics, U.S. foreign policy, but also what's happening in Europe. It's all very interconnected, ladies and gentlemen. And if you saw the news over the last couple of days, in the Republic of Georgia, there's been a major upheaval. There is a, looks like an attempted color revolution in the former Soviet Republic of Georgia, now independent state. And they passed a law, very controversial law, to outlaw Western NGOs, Western influence, Western foreign agents and interests that are trying to manipulate the country's politics. This is the sort of thing that a lot of countries do, but they don't like it. There's a lot of pushback from the European agents of influence, from the Americans. They don't like the fact that Georgia is basically trying to shore up its defenses of its own democracy. I want to bring on to the program somebody who is keeping a very keen eye on European affairs, Daniel McAdams. He's director of the Ron Paul Institute. Daniel, I mean, I really have to push the boat out first on this story because this is significant. It wasn't so long ago, Daniel, that these sort of efforts could actually topple governments. But what's happened here? Are some of these former CIS countries and African countries, are they just getting wise to the game here? Because this stuff used to work. Now they're passing laws to literally turf out all of these NGOs. This is an incredible scene, what we've seen in Georgia in the last couple of days, Daniel. I don't know if you've got any thoughts and feelings on this.
Well, I mean, it could still happen. They could still overthrow the government in Georgia. I mean, I wouldn't put anything past them. But if I could just actually clarify one thing, and I actually went, as hard as it is to find, it's very easy to find commentaries and analysis on the law, proposed law, I guess it's been adopted now, in Western media. Certainly the Western NGOs are happy to analyze it for you, but I actually found a copy of it and I read it and translated it into English. And it actually, to be honest, doesn't seem that onerous. It doesn't outlaw foreign-funded entities or NGOs whatsoever. All it says is that if more than 20% of your budget comes from a foreign power, you have to reveal, you have to be transparent and reveal where that money comes from. And this applies to four categories, what we would call NGOs, we call print media, broadcast media, and websites. So if any four of those of the four of those entities are 20% or more funded by a foreign entity, you simply have to reveal, you go on, there's all these details on how you do it. You go down and you register and you detail who is actually funding your NGO. So, I mean, to me, it looks a lot less onerous than it's being presented. It looks like a simple transparency bill. And I don't know. I thought the West was all about transparency. I guess I was wrong.
Yeah, but even with that, even as you said, Daniel, it's pretty, you know, lightweight compared to the reaction to it, though. It seems to be over the top. Is this because the hypersensitivity of Brussels? I mean, you have characters like Guy Verhofstadt, these sort of major sort of Eurocrats that go over there and browbeat people in foreign countries if they're not abiding by the rules-based international order sufficiently, talking down to the Georgians as well. And so what is this reaction from Europe, from the West? Is it because they're concerned that they don't have the upper hand when it comes to basically collaring a lot of these governments, that they'd like to swing more towards the West? Because they had Russia basically on their back heels regarding Georgia for a number of years, but it seems to have turned the tide a little bit in Georgia in recent years. They seem to have come back to more, I don't know, firm footing in terms of independence, but they were leaning more west just a few years ago. That pressure was working. Doesn't look like it's working, though. At least it doesn't seem like it. Daniel, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, it's interesting that you'd mentioned Eurocrats because, ironically enough, the European Commission is considering passing an act just like this. In fact, I would say more onerous than the more restrictive than the Georgia bill. And this is the Ursula von der Leyen's big thing, and supposedly it's going to pass in the summer in July. Basically, it's the same thing. It's that foreign lobbyists must register for the European Commission. There's not even this 20% threshold. It just says foreign lobbyists must register to the European Commission if they want to, ply their trade in our area. So it's very ironic that this big, a panic attack is taking place in Europe when they want to do the same thing, and they call it the Russia bill. But in fact, here in the United States, we've had the Foreign Agents Registration Act since, I think, 1948, maybe a little early, maybe 1940, if I'm not mistaken. I think it came about during World War II. And I mean, I reread the FARA, most of it, this afternoon in preparation for our discussion today. I didn't read all of it again, but I read a good part of it again. And again, it doesn't have these thresholds. It doesn't simply require transparency. It requires you to register as a foreign agent of a foreign government. So we have the exact same kind of law here in the United States. So the question is, why are they having a panic attack about it? And I think you're absolutely right. Georgia is a key country. When you remember what was written by the former NED chairman about Ukraine is the linchpin. Well, in a sense, Georgia is as well. And that's, of course, why Georgia goaded Russia. Georgia was goaded by the U.S. and the West to prick Russia in 2008. And they got their comeuppance. But if the West can open up a front against Russia through the Caucasus, through Georgia, and I'm sure this is probably their new plan, sort of going around in their little minds, if we can just open a front here in Georgia, we're going to finally wrong foot Russia on this. So it's very, very critical country. And Georgia, sort of psychologically, is probably more than Ukraine, torn between its own identity and its historic ties with Russia through the Soviet Union and through trade now with the CIS countries. So it's a very delicate situation there. I mean, I've been to Georgia. I was in Georgia under the Shevardnadze regime, which was another U.S.-backed regime in Georgia. I went and visited political prisoners who had served under the Gamsakhurdia government, who were being tortured under U.S. ally Shevardnadze. So I know a little bit about it. I've met with a lot of dissidents at the time. It's been a long time ago, but I think the same factors are basically at play again here as well.
Yeah, I really think a part of the master plan for NATO, for the EU, is they really would like expansion into the Caucasus, and that kind of completes the encirclement, at least most of the way anyway, under the underbelly of Russia. And they felt like they had a really good chance to do this, but they're now coming up against a lot of resistance. I think, Daniel, that some of the resistance, the homegrown resistance to this, or maybe skepticism towards the West, is because a lot of CIS countries are looking at Ukraine and thinking, this is a disaster. We don't want to have anything near something like this happening in our country. Do you think, how big of a factor do you think the Ukraine factor is for the likes of Georgia or Kazakhstan or even Armenia, for that matter?
Well, it's good that you brought up Armenia, because that's been a serious issue over the past year. You know, there have been, there's been sort of a break between Armenia and Russia, and it hasn't gone very well for the Armenians in this case. A lot of people are frustrated with their prime minister for breaking with Russia and going toward the U.S., going toward the West. But, you know, ironically, the actions of the West, the actions of the Europeans, like literally as we speak right now, should serve as justification for the law in the first place. The protests that are taking place right now, they had the third reading of the proposed law. It's now passed. It goes to the desk of the president, and this is another story we should probably get to in a minute. It goes to her desk to be signed. But literally right now, the protests are being led by high-ranking government officials, I think foreign ministers, if I'm not mistaken, of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia. So it literally is a repeat, like you say, it's a repeat of Maidan, without the odious Victoria Nuland, but with these only slightly less odious Baltic leaders literally marching at the head of this demonstration. Can you imagine if the UK government or if the US government, if there was a a protest to overthrow the lawful order, and the Chinese officials and the Russian officials and the Indian officials were marching, were leading the march, what would happen in the US? We'd literally lose our minds. The tanks would be out in the streets.
Yeah, the only person missing there marching alongside them is Bernard-Henri Lévy, France's own weapon of mass destruction, the BHL, WMD. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous. And these are really kind of radical. You mentioned these leaders of these countries, and I'll throw Finland's previous premier in there as well. But from from the Baltic states, sort of radical, I don't know, hyper third wave feminist, modern Eurocratic politicians here. We've always been told for years, Daniel, that if only the women were in charge, it would be a much more peaceful, serene world we'd live in. It doesn't seem to be the case for Europe. Look who's in charge right now.
You can add Denmark to that as well. Denmark, yes, is going to be sending the F-16s to Ukraine. So yeah, I don't know what's going on with these women in charge, but they are very, very rough. But you know, the interesting thing about this, and speaking of another woman, is Salome Zurabishvili. Now, she's the president of Georgia. She's the one who said she will veto this law when it gets to her desk. Apparently, the ruling coalition has the votes to override the veto. But she's a very curious figure in herself, in that she is actually French. She was raised in France. She never set foot in Georgia until she was in her 30s. Apparently, she doesn't speak Georgian very well. And that's noted among the population. But she was literally France's ambassador to Georgia. She was an agent of the French, literally an agent of the French government in Georgia. And she studied in the U.S. at Columbia under Brzezinski, you know, that great chessboard playing master of all things who got us into nothing but disasters over the last 30 some years. So this is a highly suspect individual of the sort we often see placed in strategic positions like this, who's now in charge of Georgia and vows to veto the bill. And I think the reason why the West is in a panic is because they see now all of a sudden that this veto can be overridden and that they're going to have the light shine. You know, the ostensibly, they are, the U.S. has funded these NGOs, and to a lesser degree the EU, to bring greater transparency to these countries. But in reality, if the transparency light shines on them, they scurry into the darkness immediately. They do not want people to know how big their footprint is on these so-called civil society organizations.
Yes, you know, the president you're talking about, Salome, she's got a profile eerily similar to another Georgian president who was parachuted in via New York by the name of Mikhail Saakashvili. That didn't work out too well in the end, did it, Daniel?
Yeah, the tie-eating rose revolutionary. That's right. You know, he's the one who thought he was going to take on Russia, and he got a big surprise when his tanks went through that tunnel into South Ossetia. So I don't think the Georgians are going to go that far. I think the people on the streets, probably a lot of them are paid, but I think there are a lot of young people that are very, I mean, I witnessed it in Belarus when they tried to have the denim revolution back in the mid-2000s. There are a lot of young people who are promised the world by these well-funded NGOs. The kids that are working in these NGOs, trust me, they are among the elites. They are extremely well paid. They have extremely well good connections. They have the latest iPhones. They're well taken care of, and they're promised that these riches will go with them as they move toward the EU. Well, when the reality comes, it's often very different from that. So, but I don't see. I don't know how they will handle, but I don't see they in terms of parliament that they have the ability to block this law any longer.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, and also how mature the body politic in Georgia is. A lot of these are young countries. It's easy for us to forget, Daniel, that in terms of independent states, truly independent states, they're very young. You're talking about 30 years in some cases, around 30 years old. So these are they have yet to mature. These places are trying to find their footing in relation to the West, in relation to their relationship with Russia, for instance, and Asia, and even broader. You talk about the Caucasus, they have to have relationships with Iran because these are, ostensibly some of the same people. They have a lot in common, in historically and by blood as well. So it's going to take some time. And I think the West has been trying to impose their will to shape some of these countries, in their mold. In a time when, they could be developing a lot more naturally and developing relationships that make sense going forward into a more of a multipolar world. So we're coming at the tail of the Western unipolar moment. And is this a dangerous time, Daniel, do you think, or is this a time where we're going to see the resolution to some of these conflicts?
I think ultimately we'll see the resolution to some of these conflicts, but I think getting from A to B is going to be a very difficult time. I think there's going to be more unrest. Georgia, they're not done with Georgia quite yet at all. They have spent too much money. The U.S. spends millions of dollars on these Georgian NGOs, but not just NGOs, newspapers, TV programs. Can you imagine, in the U.S., we are so hyper paranoid about China. We have to ban TikTok because China owns a little chunk of it. These are literally TV stations that are owned, completely funded by foreign entities. Yet there's a proposal that they have some transparency in their funding, they say, well, you're just attacking independent media. Well, by definition, if your media is funded by a foreign government, you're not independent media. I mean, that's pretty basic stuff that most people don't understand. But it's basically, rules for thee, but not for me. And that's what it's all about. That's what the US has been about. I mean, I've studied the US-led NGOs in the region, in Central Europe onward, since I arrived in Hungary in 1993. And I continue to study it very closely. But the NED is not out of business. There was Alex Rubenstein, who does work for the Gray Zone, he and his oh my gosh, his partner, I forget his name. They did a great video that came out today featuring the new head of the NED. And let me tell you, this guy is really creepy. And he went on and on and on about Georgia. They don't want to lose Georgia. They're desperate.
Other country. Now let's shift over to Ukraine, Daniel, and very much related to that, Slovakia, the Prime Minister Robert Fico, assassination attempt. Last thing we've seen, looking at the news wires right now, he's been taken to a larger hospital, I believe in Bratislava, in intensive care. He's been shot multiple times. It's really kind of on a knife edge right now in the next 2 hours, how he's going to pull through. What do you make of this, Daniel? I mean, there's a lot of people saying a lot of things right now, including what a lot of Slovakians are saying. They suspect foul play on this, suspect it's politically motivated. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it was a 72-year-old guy who shot him, was an adherent to the pro-Ukraine party in Slovakia. So that's at least what the news reporting is saying. And I did see at least one interview with him where he's basically saying this. He's tied to this pro-Ukraine party. And Fico, as we know, he was elected, they call him a populist. He was elected as a populistic type who not only he He did a 180 on Slovakia's policy toward NATO, and he had done it before he was elected, unlike a lot of politicians. He said what he was going to do, and he literally did it. So he was against that. He was against the WHO new pandemic law rule that they want to pass. He was against the COVID restrictions, all of these things. He keeps demanding peace talks for Ukraine. And so there are a number of reasons why someone like him would be shot. Apparently, he's been put in a medical coma for the next 24 hours to try to stabilize him. I think he was initially brought to a hospital in Banja Bystrica, which is would be a smaller town hospital than down to Bratislava. But apparently serious injuries, a shot through the stomach. I can imagine it's no picnic. You think about all the internal bleeding. So it's a very serious attempted political assassination. Is this guy a lone gunman? Is he a lone freak? Did he have foreign contacts? Well, you know, we won't know. We'll probably never know. Who knows? But I just can't see this changing the course of Slovak politics right now. Fico became a very popular entity in Slovakia in a very short time. And he's developed some regional allies, including Viktor Orban in next door Hungary. People that follow Hungary know that Hungary and Slovakia have had a very tense relationship for decades, you know, going back to the end of World War I. But Fico and Orban have developed a real close friendship, which is unusual. I think you can see an attempt to break this up, you know, perhaps in part of a larger scheme, but it's an enormously dramatic event in a place like Slovakia, where you don't see a lot of gun violence or violence at all, for that matter.
With everything at stake, Daniel, especially the Ukraine project, I mean, they have really sunk all of their political capital in Europe and NATO and the West into this proxy war. And it does remind me a little bit, Daniel, of the bad old days, let's just say, the 60s and 70s and 80s, politically motivated assassinations, bombings, Operation Gladio being run by NATO intelligence. That's all been, publicly known, admitted, declassified in some cases. Are we returning back to, I mean, that was during the Cold War. So there was a lot going on in terms of manipulating European politics. Are we returning to this type of an atmosphere again, Daniel, in Europe?
Yeah, I saw you posted on Twitter X about Operation Gladio, which I'm glad you did, because we should certainly consider that. I mean, the idea that the spooks running around in the Cold War, all of a sudden when it was over, said, okay, we give up. We're not going to do that stuff anymore. I mean, that's kind of fantasy land, isn't it? Because the same thing happened with NATO. They didn't give up and say, we're not going to do it anymore. They said, we're going to do it harder. So I can imagine there's a lot of stuff going on behind the scenes. There's going to be a lot of manipulations. There's going to be a lot of electoral manipulations when you see countries like Germany with the AfD and other parties, the Sarah Wegenknecht party gaining steam. In France, you see Le Pen's party at some point polling, you know, beyond Macron. There's going to be a lot of attempted manipulation in these elections. You can be sure of that.
Very concerning, to say the least. Now, I want to take a break. I want to come back and talk about our Secretary of State in the United States, Antony Blinken. He's a top diplomat in the U.S. He's made a sort of impromptu trip to Kiev. Recently, I want to talk to you about that and also the prospects of a democracy breaking out in Ukraine in the near term. I want to get your opinion on that as well. Very controversial topic. I'm with Daniel McAdams, Ron Paul Institute, the director. Follow Daniel on X, Twitter, to be up to date and get some of the latest takes on politics. We'll drop his Twitter handle, his X handle, into the TNT chat community as well. Let's take a break right now with TNT, Today's News Talk. We'll be right back after these messages.
I was a quarterback at Hardaway High School, college first round draft pick. On and off the field, we were taught to not show any signs of weakness. During the football season, I would stop eating. But I didn't know I was depressed. I thought that something was wrong with me. For 20 plus years was physical, physical, physical. We didn't have any education behind what mental health was. I started to learn it starts here first. If this is together, I'll be better as a father, as a man, and as a husband. Put the importance on your mental health. I'm not scared to talk about it anymore. The first tool is therapy. And the second one is positive self-talk. And then journaling, putting your thoughts on paper.
We have to redefine what being a strong man is
and heal, love your mind.
I'm Sandra, this is Jorge, and we were adopted in 2019. I remember when they first came to us, Michael was already a teenager. The whole cliche of, they're so lucky to have you guys, and it's the other way around. They have changed our family for the better. They chose to love us. They didn't have to. They chose us. Family.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org.
With a compelling perspective on global politics, this is the Patrick Henningsen Show on TNT Radio.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this live broadcast. We're in hour number two. In the final segment of the final hour, thank you for joining us. We're live and direct here Monday to Friday at this very time. Hope to see you guys tomorrow as well. We got another powerful show lined up for you then. Right now, however, I want to welcome back onto the stage Daniel McAdams. He is the director of the Ron Paul Institute, and he's also a seasoned veteran of politics, including experience on Capitol Hill working for Dr. Ron Paul while he was a long-term congressman serving his district in Texas. But Daniel, on the foreign policy front, it seems that the U.S. is very, very committed to the Ukrainian project, despite the fact it's not going very well. Tony Blinken has made some interesting comments on democracy in Ukraine of recent. He says we need to, you know, ensure that Ukraine can have the tools it needs to be a thriving democracy going forward. Out of one side of his mouth, he's saying this. Out of the other side of his mouth, he's saying, well, they're not ready to have elections yet. And the mandate or the, you know, for the elections, whether they're going to have them or not, or suspending them is being renewed, I think, in the next a few days, in fact. And I don't think they're going to be announcing elections. So does this mean an indefinite suspension of elections in Ukraine? And if so, what do these comments mean by Tony Blinken? Does this mean it's something to do with the political viability of Zelensky? What do you, how are you reading this situation?
Well, it seems like the mask slips, right? You know, you've got to have democracy, but we can't have a vote, you know, which is, at least, you know, as in our understanding, that's by definition what democracy is, that the people get to choose who their leaders are. And what Blinken said when he made this surprise visit to Kiev was that you guys aren't going to hold a vote until every Ukrainian can vote, you know, meaning I suppose, you know, the Donbass, but maybe even Crimea. I mean, maybe he's even holding that out. So he's just giving them a pass. But the fact of the matter is, on the 21st, the current government, including the president of Ukraine, loses its electoral mandate, meaning that it becomes a usurper government. It becomes a government like what the U.S. installed after it overthrew the Yanukovych government. It does not have an electoral mandate. And I think that's the reason why Blinken rushed in there just a few days before its mandate expires, because it loses its democratic legitimacy, and they had to figure out a cover story for this. What are we going to do? I mean, this could be dangerous. And I think that's what his trip was all about, to come up with some kind of a story that they can tell to say, we have democracy, but we don't have a vote. We don't have a free press. We've outlawed the opposition parties. We've shut down all the churches, and we're going around the country kidnapping all the men. So, you know, it's just trying to keep the mask off, but I think it's on, but I think it's slipped some now.
Well, part of the illusion here, or the delusion in Washington, Daniel, is I'm sure you've had a few conversations, or at least eavesdropped on enough of them. There is a belief in Washington that Crimea is Ukraine and that the Donbass is Ukraine, and they're going to get them back by hook or crook because it's the right thing to do, quote unquote. And whatever it takes, whatever it costs. But do these people in America understand that the people in those parts of Crimea and Donbass especially, they're nested very comfortably under the banner of the Russian Federation now, and they do identify as Russian? Do people in America, especially in political positions, Daniel, Do they really have a grasp on this concept or not? And is this what's directing their sort of vitriol and insistence that these they're going to be liberating these areas at some point? It's hard for me to get my head around sometimes. Daniel, what do you think?
I mean, I do think the neocons actually believe the stuff that they spew. I really do think they believe it. They are the thinking is so circular and so insular that they really do believe the rhetoric that they spew. And the rest of the population, to a large degree, is enormously propagandized on one hand, and on the other hand, pretty disinterested. You know, this is so far away. The Americans traditionally haven't cared about foreign policy. We've got a couple of oceans between us and the rest of the world. You know, if it leads you to wave the flag and say, rah, 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 well, then that's fine. But there's not really a lot of deep analysis. But I do think, you know, if you look at the recent polls, Americans are sick of spending all this money in Ukraine. And I think that's the part that will start to catalyze people if they can be convinced that the reason they're paying so much money at the store is because the government is creating money out of thin air and sending it to Ukraine, not to Ukraine, but to U.S. corporations. Then I think they'll start to turn against it. But by and large, yeah, the circular thinking in D.C., I am sure they believe this. I'm sure it's right. They think it's right around the corner. Just one more, you know, wonder weapon. As soon as they get those F-16s, man, it's going to be all over. But you and I remember when they were saying this, you know, a year and a half ago with the what were the initial missiles, the anti-tank missiles, the Javelins. Remember, just send the Javelins it'll be over. Yeah, just send the Javelins. So they keep going, and now it's going to be the F-16s. You know, where are they going to take off from? Where are they going to land? How are they going to stay in the air when they don't have air superiority? You know, and I mean, I'm not a military expert, and I seem to know more than the military experts, and that scares me because I know how dumb I am on military stuff.
It seems to me, Daniel, that a lot of the so-called military experts are really just interested in sales at this point. They really don't care whether it has any viability on the field. I debated a few of them on Twitter spaces, and it's pretty shocking. They're really into moving product at the end of the day, and they don't really care how it actually performs on the battlefield, if it even makes it to the battlefield. But that's not much different than most of the U.S. defense contractors domestically anyway. But Daniel, in the great tradition of, you know, musicians traveling to war zones, you know, Elvis Presley, the USO, it's a great tradition of this in America. And another great artist showed up for an impromptu gig in Kiev, quite extraordinary. Even more extraordinary is that this was broadcast on C-SPAN as well. I'm trying to get my head around that one. I've got the clip here. Let's watch this and we'll get your reaction to this incredible performance. Go ahead and roll this.
Talk about Boomer Cringe.
It's That's Tony Blinken on lead guitar and vocals doing a Neil Young cover, Keep On Rocking in the Free World. What on earth is this? I mean, this is our Secretary of State, right? This is what, the fourth person in charge in the U.S. power hierarchy there, the government, number one diplomat. And why is C-SPAN broadcasting this, Daniel?
It just happened to show up at this little pub at the right time. It's kind of shameful because, I mean, I guess it's newsworthy in a way, but dragging C-SPAN along to highlight his boomer dreams of being, you know, in a rock band is pretty sad. But the thing that gets me the most about it, hey, I mean, I probably would do it if I wouldn't do it probably as Secretary of State, but it looks like a little bit of fun. But the thing is, don't they understand the irony of this song? I mean, do they not know that Neil wrote this song to literally make fun of the jingoism that permeated the first George Bush administration, the George Herbert Walker Bush administration? You don't even have to be an expert. Just simply on your internet, there's a thing called, you know, lyrics, and type them in and see what he was talking about. He was talking about the folly of global military empire when America was starving and sending its best kids off to get blown up overseas. That's what the whole song was about. Of all the songs in the world you could be up there playing, who the heck chose this one? I mean, it is, it's incredible.
No, really. Yeah. Not just failure to read the room, failure to actually read the lyrics in this case. So it's Neil Young basically, you know, calling out U.S. democracy as a sham and the sins of empire, and Blinken's ironically performing this as if this was a kind of a liberation theme for, you know, the beleaguered Ukrainians and their the green shoots of democracy there in Kiev. So yeah, he couldn't get that any wrong. If he got that wrong, if he missed out on that important salient point, Daniel, you sort of have to question a lot of other things. I would think, is this person really, you know, the right, is it up for this job or not? I mean, it's kind of, I've got a lot of questions now.
Well, you know, there are a lot of nerds and dweebs that work in the State Department, you know, and I worked there very briefly, and I follow it closely, but I can only imagine some sort of lower under deputy, what have you, you know, secretary, thinking this was the coolest idea ever. And them all sitting around at a staff meeting say, I have got the most amazing idea. This is going to be so awesome. You know, this is so great. The morale is going to, you know, go through the roof when we do this. And, you know, and everyone thinking, this is going to be really edgy. You know, it's hilarious to think. But, you know, he not only did that, Patrick, but he went and he had pizza with Dmytro Kuleba, the foreign minister of Ukraine. And here's also a problem with the visuals, because in this pizza parlor, and someone just put it on Twitter X, it's full of like Nazi memorabilia, you know, it's full of like, you know, patches from the Azov. It's got, you know, because, you know, a lot of these Ukrainian military groups have adopted Nazi, you know, looking insignias. The place is full of it. And in fact, where he and Kuleba were sitting, someone put up a photo of that exact booth, how it had been before they arrived. And right there between the two of them was a picture of the trade union building in Odessa that was blown up, that was set on fire, killing many, many people 10 years ago, I think just last week. And they actually had the presence of mind to move that a little bit to the side, but they left their Nazi memorabilia in the back. So not a good look for the Secretary of State, all in all.
And Blinken's completely aloof to any of that paraphernalia on the wall, doesn't recognize it, doesn't understand what it means. I mean, I probably think he doesn't, Daniel, doesn't know how to read Neil Young's songs. So, I mean, certainly not going to be able to decipher neo-Nazi paraphernalia on the wall of a pizza parlor in Kiev. It's pretty shocking stuff. So now we're at this kind of bizarre impasse. It's got a couple minutes left, Daniel. I'm a little worried, Daniel, still on Ukraine, because we're seeing, you know, the British leader Sunak saying some crazy things about Russia has been cutting off gas and starving Europeans. You have these other sort of statements from these other leaders. It's like they're stacking up this case against Russia. Do you think they're going to double down and, I don't know, maybe formalize this war footing with Russia over the summer? Because I don't see any way out. It's either exit stage right on this, or it's double down and escalate. What are your thoughts? Final thoughts. I'll give you the floor, Daniel. Go ahead.
I mean, if they do that, they'll be blown to pieces. I mean, it's just a fact. And that's the reason why the Russian foreign ministry summoned the ambassadors from the UK and France to the foreign ministry for a demarche, telling them, listen, the rhetoric that you guys are spewing, if you encourage the Ukrainians to send the missiles, the Storm Shadow missiles that you've given them deep into Russia, we will not only hit your facilities in Ukraine, i.e. the people that we know you have from your military operating these, but we will hit them potentially elsewhere, meaning the source in the UK, in London and Paris. It's a very clear warning. And, you know, what the West should understand is that Putin and the Russians don't bluff. You can like them or hate them or be indifferent, but they don't bluff on things. They're not like our leaders. So if they attempt to do something like this, then it will escalate. But the European military is in no position to take on Russia. And by the way, Russia just opened a fifth front in Kharkov. And literally, while Blinken was eating his Nazi pizza and playing his Neil Young, the Russians were about, I think, 40 or 50 miles away approaching Kharkov. So they could almost, you know, hear the footsteps of the Russians in the back as they were munching on that pepperoni pizza.
Yeah, and that's going to be a game changer, Daniel, not least of all that it's going to relieve a lot of pressure on Donetsk, where there's been missiles being fired at civilian areas almost continuously for the better part of 9 years, in fact. So it'll give them some respite from this and allow Russia to reorganize and its lines of defenses and so forth to the true borders of Donbass, at least, maybe further. It's going to get very interesting. I think there's going to be a lot of revelations, Daniel, including Odessa. What's going to happen with Odessa? This is also on the drawing board right now. So it's going to be a very interesting couple of months, and I am really not looking forward to seeing the Western reaction from some of these Russian advances. There's going to be a lot of panic, a lot of hysterics, a lot of eulogizing, and all sorts of things going on in all these political positions in Europe and America. I hope that some sanity returns to the fold, Daniel. I hope it comes via U.S. leadership, but I'm not holding my breath. I don't think you are either on that front, but we hope that these things are going to resolve themselves. Daniel McAdams, Ron Paul Institute Director. Daniel, really appreciate your time this week on TNT Today's News Talk.
Thank you, Patrick. Appreciate being on.
And ladies and gentlemen, you definitely want to be following Daniel's account on X, Twitter. Again, we'll drop the links to that in the TNT chat community. We've also got that in our show post. Daniel, accounts like Daniel and Freddie, you're really going to get an unvarnished take on global politics, and you're going to be better informed for it. These are the people you got to follow, because these are the people we follow. This is why we're able to deliver the sort of news, commentary, and analysis, because we're talking and we're listening to these people almost on a daily basis. So we're going to give those resources to you too, and you're going to be better off for it. That's it, ladies and gentlemen. That's all we got time for today. It has been an absolutely powerful show today. Wow. Freddie Ponton, Daniel L. McAdams, appreciate you guys joining us, all of our listeners, all of our audience. Really great to have you with us. We're going to do it again tomorrow. It's going to be even more powerful, I can assure you. Take care, folks. We'll see you same time, same place. Patrick Kenningson signing out. State of the Nation coming up. Stay on TNT Live. Hesher and Tim O'Shea coming up in just a few minutes.